Hey everybody, welcome to the Phase 9 review. You know, the thing that happened like 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, it was a thing.
Yeah. We've been on a holiday hiatus.
Christmas. Hanukkah.
Christmas.
Kwanzaa, if you do that thing.
Yeah.
I never understood that holiday, honestly.
From Hanukkah and Kwanzaa.
Isn't it like some African heritage thing?
I know it's like they kind of like make their gifts, and it's more meaningful.
Oh, dude, that sounds awesome. I'm celebrating Kwanzaa next year. I want to get homemade stuff.
I kind of want to look at like some of these like the different types of religious, I wouldn't really say it's religious, but like holiday practices that they have around this time of year, and I wish I'd look into them more, because a lot of them are really interesting.
You know what's really funny though is I have a lot of pagan friends, so of course I just instinctively text all my friends Merry Christmas. One of my buddies, he replies, what is it? It's something like Happy Holiday the Christians stole from us, or something like that.
Oh jeez.
And my only response to that is, yeah, we're really good at that.
Remember, Cats of the Poomverse is not... God damn it,
I broke a rule.
You broke a rule.
Hey, that's holiday festive and history. That's different. That is history right there, my friend.
All right. So what have you been up to?
Well, it was Christmas. I got stuff. I got the cool thing that I got a Roxio game capture. I got a couple of nice wolf blankets, and I got things I can't remember because it was a bunch of stuff. But what was really nice, it was the first time that we had a family Christmas where the house was packed for the first time in like 7 years. Because my sisters, you know, they're older than me, they move out, they go and do their own things. And it actually wasn't on Christmas Day because they were each... one of my sisters is married, so she was with her husband's family. My other sister is in a serious relationship, so she was with her boyfriend's family. So it was just me, my dad, my mom, and my two uncles, who basically only show up to eat some food, say hello, exchange gifts, and then leave. So yeah, it was really nice to have a big kind of family thing with my brother-in-law, my sister's boyfriend, my nephew, and the full family. And it was really great. Actually, I loved it, though I was exhausted by the end of the day.
Yeah.
And I made the best gravy that I ever made, so that's a thing, because that's my job. Is every holiday I make the gravy. I'm living.
You've heard it here first, folks.
Patented dozer gravy, a specialty.
Let's not get into that. My holiday wasn't too amazing. I mean, I got socks, but I'm not complaining because I wanted socks.
Socks are good. Socks are good.
I got basically like gift cards. I got a tool set for some reason.
Tool set?
Like my stepfather was like, "Hey, you're into like computers and stuff, so here's some tools." Now, I could understand, like, maybe, like, a couple screwdrivers and stuff like that, but among the tools was a socket wrench and a hammer.
No, see, that's just an obligatory, you're over 18 now, here's your first man thrift Christmas gift, because I got that, I think it was my first year of college, I got a tool set for Christmas as well, so I think that's just a thing.
Yeah, I also got an electric blanket, and I remember on the I started using it about 2 nights ago. Well, I used it 2 nights ago, and what happened was, I was laying in bed, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna use this thing, and then I was about to go to sleep, and I'm like, wait, is this safe? And then I spent maybe about a half hour reading articles on how it causes cancer and how it can cause fires, and I got so scared that I ended up unplugging it and tossing it in the corner of my room. Probably more of a fire hazard there than anything else, because that's the corner that has all my wires I use on my editing equipment and such. But
that was my face hitting my desk. That hurt.
Oh my. It's been a Christmas.
No, honestly, electric blankets are amazing. Growing up,
it was comfy. My parents had one. I won't lie there. Up,
and whenever they were out of town, I'd sleep in their bedroom. Because I was a little kid and I didn't know any better. And they had this electric mm-hmm. blanket, and in winter, it was just the best thing ever. Because it's just, you curl up, you turn it on, and it's just, you don't leave. Ever.
I just realized we haven't mentioned the biggest elephant in the
room. So, Queenie, right, what have you been up to? Oh, wait, that's right.
Yeah. Holidays are rough. Sometimes you don't feel very well.
So, the lovely Lady Queenie is sick. So, yes. There is a lack of royalty today in the Boomburst.
It's very unfortunate. We're gonna lose because we're very biased against the male race now. Sorry. But
there is a plus side to this. There is a neutral mod amongst our cast now.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That did get announced.
Yeah, a while ago. for those who don't know, I was recently Shaman, the neutral mod for Pokemon Turf Wars, because of real-life situations. I don't think it was anything serious, just time constraints. Had to step down as neutral mod, unfortunately. And he asked me if I wanted to take his place. I was just kind of like, yes, yes, save me from this Arcadia hell. I'm sorry. I'm not patriotic in any way. And Arcadia is very easily considered the most patriotic Turf Wars team. And I find it annoying at times, even though I love all of them. They're great people. But oh my gosh, we get it. You like your team.
So on the topic of Hail Arcadia, we've got...
oh gosh.
We've got a lot of stuff that happened in Phase 9 we got to talk about. Oh my gosh. And you know what? Maybe by the time we're done recording this, we might be able to look into Phase 10 a little bit, because even now there's some stuff posted in the ledger. Yes. For those of you who don't know, we usually record these on Sunday nights.
No, I thought we did them.
We did the first one on Sunday night too.
We had to. We try to do them on Saturday night so I can edit on Sunday and then I can push it out on Monday. So this is probably coming out on either a Tuesday or a Wednesday, depending on how much time I have.
Yeah. But some of us like to go have fun on our Saturday nights. Some of us like to go bowling with our friends and watch our friends split their pants while they're bowling.
Some of us like to curl up and take a nap. That's what I did. You went out to have fun with that thing called friends. I curled up in bed with a good book and passed out.
Look, I had to hang out with a guy who had his pants split for 2 hours and was complaining because we wouldn't let him go home.
Okay, that's just cruel.
It wasn't cruel. That is... What was cruel is how the employees at the bowling alley were. Because he went up and asked them if he could have a piece of tape to maybe put his pants back together, and they gave him a 4-inch piece of, like, scotch tape. Like something you'd hang a poster up with.
That doesn't help mediate the situation. That's not subtle. It's pretty much, he'd be better off without the tape, probably.
Yeah. It ended up making it worse.
Yeah, because then it's just like, that guy has tape on his crotch. Don't ask me why I defaulted to that accent. It was just the first thing that popped out of my mouth.
Well, if people up here talked like that, I think it'd be a little more bearable. So now that we're done bashing nationalities and teams, let's get into the meat.
All right. So, where do you want to start this? What team do you want to attack first?
Let's start out with Snag'em. Because it's kind of a short one.
They didn't do a lot. Snag'em, really. They attacked Magma at two locations, Cerulean and Viridian City, and Magma successfully defended both locations, winning 4-2 with the admin victory in Cerulean and 4-1 in Viridian. They also were attacked by Arcadia at Striton at Tilt and Tilt Village.
Yes, which I need the map for this. Tilt Village, that is the highway location
Snagum claimed, that's right, in Phase 7.
I thought so. I was trying to remember if it was one or not, and whether or not I'd sound like an idiot if I said it was.
Well, no, it was definitely a highway location. We tied Arcadia, not we, Arcadia. I'm still getting used to this whole not an Arcadian thing. Bear with me. Arcadia tried to reclaim it since Snagum hadn't done any more moves in turn 8 in Oblivia, so the opportunity for Arcadia to get Snagum out of Oblivia again presented itself, but Snagum put up a defensive action, which helped them a lot, I'd say, because it guaranteed that admin battle, which is where things turned around. Because out of the three grunt battles that took place, Arcadia won them all. All of them. Then Snagum, though, won the admin and then the leader battle to successfully defend Tilt Village.
But speaking of Arcadia, we've got some little things going on there.
Do we want to take care of the elephant in the room, looking at the battle tracker for those from Turf Wars who follow that along? By the way, the battle tracker will this time be linked in the episode description. Wireless tower is currently not completed, because what happened is Dimsun won 3 grunt battles, then Arcadia won the 4th grunt battle and the admin battle, leaving it at a 3-3 tie. And Panda and Blake, I was in the Turf Wars chat at the time, decided to postpone the leader battle for a later day because they'd done a lot of battles, it was getting late, and they wanted to go to bed. So they were fine with that, and it never happened.
Yeah. Now, obviously, this wouldn't play into the whole tardy rule, because, first of all, both
agreed
of them
to reschedule
weren't
it
there.
And leader battles tend to be a special case, because most of the time they're tiebreakers, which means their battle, unless it's for a highway location, in which case they just take place with the admin battle. But tiebreaker leader battles are unique because they're not planned, generally. So, and a lot of times you just got done with 5 battles at least, and that can take up to an hour, and generally people only schedule for an hour for each location. So there's either more battles that they need to go on and do, or they're tired from a bunch of battles. So it's not uncommon to see leader battles put off, and then the leaders just talk amongst themselves and reschedule it. It's very common practice. However, this had the disadvantage of procrastination in a vacation phase, and Panda, who I talked to, said that he just forgot about it. And
I mean, you can't really blame him, though. I mean, we've got it's been like Christmas,
so
and
much
the holidays,
going on.
And there's so much going on right now. I mean, it was bound to happen eventually. Someone was going to forget something somewhere, and it's no one's fault.
No, it's just circumstances, because he sent me a private message asking me what I, if, since Arcadia was the defending side, if they default the win, and I couldn't, because when I'm looking at a situation like this now as a neutral mod, I think when I make a call, when other people make a call, it sets a precedent, and there shouldn't be a precedent set that can be abused. And the thing is, in this case, it was a tie. There was just the leader battle left. It was forgot. So they can either... I figured it's like, if you guys can get the leader battle done soon, all the more power to you. The thing with the control of the territory wireless tower, there's only 3 teams that have a route to it. And they are Snagum and, of course, Dimsun and Arcadia, who are battling over it. And I do not believe Wireless Tower is a... It's not a highway location.
No, it's not. And the thing about it is it's an Oblivion location. Mm-hmm. The only problem we're really going to run into is if sometime in Phase 10 someone's going to challenge the Wireless Tower for whatever reason. All of the areas in Oblivia right now are fair game to go after, because in Oblivia, you're allowed to jump around. Mm-hmm. So it's not that big a deal. It's not a chaining location or anything. It's only going to run into problems if someone, for whatever reason, because honestly, if you're going to target it this phase, it's not quite the smartest thing, because we don't even know who's holding possession of it.
You might as well as pick any other place in Oblivia, and I think the only reason Dim Sun went for it was because they're going for bonus points.
Exactly.
So
they're trying, well, right now they're trying to, I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to throw Arcadia's bonus points out of whack, because right now, if you look at what's going on in Oblivia, Arcadia has all of Northwestern Oblivia. Yep. And they have all of Southwestern Oblivia. But if Dim Sun can get their foot in there in Southwestern Oblivia, which has the most points in Oblivia, they can slowly start to take over it. And it'll make it even harder for Arcadia to get that.
Because if Arcadia loses Wireless Tower, they don't just lose the 1 point for location, they lose two bonus victory points because it has more than four territories in it. More than four locations in that territory. So that would actually cause them to drop 3 points.
Yeah, it's going to be a pretty big loss if they lose it. I feel like the battle just should be done sometime during Phase 10. As long as no one really targets it, I feel like it can be done any time during Phase 10 and be completely fine.
My thought is they can figure it out for themselves. They should be able to. They're all mature people.
They know what they're doing.
They're leaders of their teams. They know how to get things done. They just forgot. It's fine. There's no punishment. But there's not going to be any default win from one team to another.
Yeah, like, stuff like that can really ruin something.
If anything, I'd rather see it go neutral territory than anything if they can't get their act together. Now, I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. That is not what's going to happen.
Yeah, I would say that would just be a terrible idea.
Well, it's the only fair option, though, if they can't
agree. I think if you're going to do something that they can't agree on, probably the best thing to do would be to redo the battles in Phase 10.
That just clogs up things with Phase 10 as it is, because as we see here, you can look at this battle tracker and see how many battles one team has. Magma had, like, 9?
Yeah, you got a point there. So we'll talk about Phase 10 when we get to it.
And they can, if they wanted to push, and the thing is, it's only one battle. Why should any team redo 5 battles just for one leader battle? They should just get that one leader battle done. It shouldn't be an issue. And I don't foresee it being an issue. But like I say, I wouldn't want something like this to default to one side or another, because I was asked that. And it's something, you know, you got to think about that too. It's like, well, do you give it to the defenders? But the thing is, if you have a precedent for defenders default as the win, that means defenders don't need to be as cooperative, for example, in organizing battles. Because if it doesn't finish, they get defaulted the win.
Yeah.
It's a touchy situation, but it's simply solved by getting their battles done.
Exactly.
So basically, the whole thing is get your battles done on time, and everything should be fine. If you need to push things around a little bit to fudge, like a single leader battle, it's no big deal. It takes like, what, 10 minutes?
Depending on if someone's running stall. But
well, we've seen a Panda versus Blake leader battle last phase, and it did not last a long time.
No, it ended with
a 6-0.
A 6-0 by the frickin' Beyblade. So
yes. Oh my gosh, that thing was a monster.
Yeah. So going back to Arcadia battles after that touchy subject.
Other than that, it was Magma attacked them in Ecruteak City, which Arcadia successfully defended 4-1. What really is interesting to me is they were attacked by Solar Trinity at Slateport and lost. Hard.
Yep, they went for Slateport again.
And it paid off for Solar Trinity this time as they take it 4-0.
Yeah, with only two grunts.
Yeah, two grunts and an admin, and Arcadia lost a territory to Solar Trinity again, which isn't something that has been relatively more common since the new Megas came out, actually.
New Megas and the type trading as well.
Well, no, Turn 7 had the type trade.
Yeah,
and Solar Trinity did not win from Arcadia. It wasn't until the new Megas came out that we saw the Pacific log. But still, they've been fighting hard, and they're starting to climb up. Let's go and actually take a look at what happened with them. They had three battles overall. They weren't attacked at all, which not being attacked in Turf Wars is an extremely advantageous position. Because you have nothing to lose. At all.
No.
It's nothing but gain. And boy, did they gain. They attacked three territories, Verdanturf, Lava Ridge, and Slateport. Verdanturf and Lava Ridge against Magma, and we already said they won Slateport from Arcadia. They also won Verdanturf from Magma, and almost won Lava Ridge from Magma, but that one went down to a leader battle. Zach, did you see this one?
Who was it again?
It was Lysandra and Maxi.
I did not.
All right, well, I watched it, and it was interesting. Basically, what did a lot of damage is Lysandra brought three dragons in her team, and Maxi brought Mammoth Swine.
I heard about this, and she didn't she also have a Heatran, right?
Yeah, and Heatran normally handles it was an air balloon Heatran, which normally handles Mammoth Swine just fine, but Maxi's Mammoth Swine was carrying Superpower.
Yeah.
Which one hit KO'd the Heatran.
The move tutors, that's another thing in these next few phases. I'm really loving all these move tutor moves coming back and being very usable back in the game again. And Superpower Mamoswine is just one of those we're going to be seeing a bunch of these coming back now.
Yeah, and I've seen, in battles, a lot of big losses because Pokemon carrying moves that we're not used to them carrying anymore. I'm not sure about this one. It was Diancie, because this is the Snagum Arcadia leader battle over Tilt Village that Snagum won.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that was because Panda's Metagross was knocked out by an Earth Power from Mega Diancie. And I don't know if Diancie gets Earth Power regularly by level up, or if that was a move tutor move, or what.
I'm not sure about that.
But I don't think anyone...
Wait, I think the event one had one.
Did the event one have one?
I think it did.
Okay,
because...
Either way, that's an obscure Pokemon. It's really hard to know what the moves are. And it's the same concept with now these move tutor moves. Especially a lot of Turf Wars players haven't been playing competitive for long. A lot of them, X and Y was their first game where they played with competitive Pokemon.
Yeah,
so they're not used to the move tutor moves that we saw in Black 2 and White 2.
Yeah,
and that's Superpower Mamoswine was a thing back in Black White, Black 2, White 2. Not so much in X and Y, and now all of a sudden it's relevant again.
Yeah.
So that really hurt, because if Lysandra could have taken out that Mamoswine, it would have been a lot closer battle. But props to her for using Latias. I love that Pokemon. Latias.
All right.
Moving on.
So, moving on. Our last teams, we have Magma.
Which, honestly, Magma comprised of over half the battles.
Yeah, they put in a lot of work this phase.
Oh my goodness. There was, they didn't actually finish one of their battles because they had so many they didn't all complete, because let me think, they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. They had their three attacking ones. They were attacked by Dim Sun once, Snagum twice, and Solar Trinity twice. We already talked about the Solar Trinity ones. We talked about how Magma defended against Snagum, and Magma also defended against Dim Sun in Hearthhome City. Yeah, so they're winning.
One thing to say about Magma is they did go for another chain again, which they are so far the only team who's been able to pull off these chain attacks.
I wouldn't say they exactly pulled off this one, though.
Well, they at least got to the next point in this chain.
They attacked Eternus City, and they chain an action to Floroma Town, and also probably in the chaos of all of their battles and the holidays coming up, and we all know activity has been really dull because of the holidays lately. The Floroma Town battle didn't happen. Yeah. And it's basically Maxi, he asked me in the mod chat, or just everyone in general, but I was there and I responded, about if he can just attack at this phase, and basically, because there is that repeat battles rule.
Exactly.
And that rule is written as two teams may not fight over the same location two turns in a row. Now, here's where it's kind of touchy, because even though the attack was declared, they didn't fight over Floroma Town.
Yeah, which, in this situation, how do you go about that? Because
the battle didn't happen. Yeah. So, he shouldn't... Magma shouldn't be stopped from attacking it again because they had attempted to attack it, but never actually had the battle, if that makes any sense. Think of it as the chain failing, essentially.
Okay, yeah, that basically makes sense.
The chain failed because they couldn't continue the action, but they still controlled Eternus City, so they never battled for Floroma Town, so now they can attack it again. It's basically pushing the battle back another phase, but to keep teams from being swarmed with too many battles, they're basically just using two of their tokens in phase 10 to redo that battle that never happened.
Yeah.
That's a lot of rambling for me, but that's basically... Because I personally don't see anything wrong with that. It's like, you know, that never really battled. You didn't technically fight. So, and the repeat battle rule says, and I quote, two teams may not fight over the same location two turns in a row. May not fight.
Yeah.
That's your key word.
And since they haven't fought, there's...
My interpretation of the rule is that it is... does not apply. And you also got to look for the reason that that rule exists.
Yeah, it's so that two teams can't just go back and forth over and over again, and you're stuck just fighting over the same thing. It gets boring. So basically what it comes down to is because there was no fighting, because there was no even conflict over the area, it's just going to be treated as a broken chain, and they can fight over it this phase.
Basically, it never happened.
Exactly.
That's all there is to it. But other than that, the only battle Magma lost in turn 9 was in Ecruteak against Arcadia, which we already talked about. Everything else they won that they fought for.
Mm-hmm.
Which is... It's interesting to see because Magma's been taking a lot of hits. Like, the two most popular names I've ever seen on these battle trackers are either Magma or Arcadia.
Yeah.
Because if you combine those two teams, they're involved in everything. Versus, well, if you combine, like, Snagum and Dim Sun or Solar Trinity, you know, even if you combined all three of them, they wouldn't be involved in every single battle.
I'm just going to quote Maxi here. 7.8 out of 10, too many Magma battles, frowny face, Maxi, 2014. I feel really bad. They're getting a lot of battles, and honestly, over this whole Floroma thing, I don't blame them for missing this.
No.
I mean, in a cramped phase as it is, I mean, look at this. Over half of turn 9's battles were Magma.
Exactly.
I mean, that is insane.
Like, I was talking to some of them, and they just seemed plumb out exhausted.
And you can't blame them. I mean, look at all this.
And not to mention, there's, like, you only see 4 or 5 Magma members ever online at a single time.
Yeah.
You know, like, and they keep, it's always the same grunts fighting wave after wave after wave, and we saw all that happening in Season 1. Teams barely able to hang on, having multiple battles in the same phase with only like 3 or 4 grunts able to make it.
let that be known that season one was a little different in that it was every 2 days or so.
Oh my gosh, it was brutal.
Yeah. For those of you who joined season two,
you're blessed.
Basically, our phase 10 here would have been approximately phase...
What is it? You had 24 or 36 hours to get all your battles in.
Mm-hmm, basically. To put it simply, I believe phase 23 is how many we got up to in season one.
And that was over a period of...
A little over a month.
Yeah, 3 weeks, I think, actually. Not even a month.
Yeah. And this has been going on since the beginning of September, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're only on turn 9, so it's a lot slower. It's like at the end. Pace.
It's a lot slower pace. We would have been probably at phase 43.
By now. And yeah. Tired of this. It would have been disastrous to keep going at that pace. Because it was the same amount of tokens everyone had. And there were more teams, which meant there were more battles. Because there were 8 teams for the most of it. Cause...
There were not... Oh, yeah. My bad.
There were 9 in the beginning.
And then there were 8. And then there was Syarkos.
And so that was... 8 teams, and there was no defensive actions either. So it was 8 teams, each with 6 tokens. So that was 6 times 8 is 38? Yeah, 38 yeah. Battles per
no,
turn.
No, no. 6 times 8, you said?
Maybe? 48?
No, because they take 48. 2 tokens. 2 tokens oh, yeah. Per attack. 6 tokens. Times 8 is 42. 42 divided by 2... comes out to a whopping 21 possible battles per turn, depending on if it was highways or not.
And this is why I'm an English major. I don't do math.
I don't do math either.
You just did math.
I didn't do math. I did geometry. All right. So moving on, we'll talk about the victory point standings right now.
Did we cover all the teams?
I believe so, because if we... We didn't talk about Dim Sun.
But no, we've covered, hit every Dim Sun battle.
We've already hit all Dim Sun battles. The thing about these reviews is that we may not get to every team in a segment. We'll probably just rotate them or something. But there's always going to be one team that we won't talk about that much because we'll have talked about all their battles already in previous team rundowns.
So yeah, short, because there's a lot of overlap.
In short, Dim Sun, we like you guys. Have fun next battle. So let's move on to the victory port standings, or better yet, we'll take a look at the territory breakdowns first.
The location breakdown. Dun dun dun.
All right, so we're gonna start out in first place. Last phase was Arcadia, with their 38 locations. They lost one location to Solar Trinity, being Slateport City, which, again, I think was kind of interesting how they went after Slateport for a second time and won it this time. But they ended up gaining 2 locations from Dim Sung and Snag'em, which brings them up to a point total of 39 locations, with the pending location of the Wireless Tower.
Being undecided, which if they win that, they will
go back down to 38. Well,
if they win that, they will remain at 39.
Yeah.
And if they lose it, they will go back down to 38. So worst case scenario for Arcadia is they have the same number of locations as last phase.
Yeah, which is not something to really.
That's actually really
complaining about. That's pretty good.
You'll also notice that that's a common pattern we have here.
Next up is Dim Sung. Our second place team. Last phase, they had 26 locations, but they lost locations to both Arcadia and Magma, being Shaler City, and the other...
Eterna City.
Being Eterna City.
Yep.
Bringing them down to 24, but again, they have that undecided location at Wireless Tower, which could possibly bump them up to 25, or leave them where they're at. So
worst case scenario for Dim Sun is 24.
Worst case is they lost two. Best is they only lost one.
Mm-hmm. Not bad.
Next up, we have Magma in third place last phase, who had 20 locations to start off.
And this phase, they lost a location to Solar Trinity, being Lava Ridge Town, but they gained one from Dimsun, being the Eterna City that we mentioned before. So Dimsun averages out back at their good old 20 locations.
Yep, breaking even.
Then there is Snagum, who last phase had 16 locations. They lost one to Arcadia, being Striden City. They gained 0 locations, and means Snagum currently has 15 locations.
Mm-hmm.
Then finally, who was in 5th place last week? We had Soli Trinity, who had 12 locations. And they had a good week this week, wouldn't you say, Sai?
Oh yeah, they had a great week. I mean,
well,
this one, yeah. Well, yeah.
A couple weeks ago. They had a good phase 9.
Yeah. Wins against Arcadia for, again, the Slateport, for Slateport, which they tried chaining last time, and the win against Magma, who's been on a roll lately. It's just great for Solar Trinity. It's good to see them climbing the ranks.
Mm-hmm. And on top of that, they were not attacked at all, so they lost 0 locations, meaning they now have a grand total of 14 locations.
Yes.
But there's more to the victory point calculations than that, so let's go into the victory point breakdown now.
Alright, so we're gonna go restart again with Arcadia, who is still in first place. These are stats for if they were to lose Wireless Tower, because we're just gonna put these Worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. So losing the Wireless Tower would, of course, make them not gain points from controlling all of Southwest.
Oblivia. Which means that
since... I was going to say Ore for some reason. All of Southwest Ore.
You're going back to your... going back in time there, Sai, to your little Cypher days.
Yeah, so they lost... they'll lose 2 points from that. But be bumped up by 2 points, bringing them to a total of 47 currently.
Because what is it? They lost 2 bonus points from Wireless Tower. Like I say, if they lose... Then -1 for the actual territory for Wireless Tower, making that -3. Then it's a -1 for Slateport, which is the -4. But then they gain Straighten and Shallor, so it's only a -2 overall.
Exactly. Which isn't bad at all. It's still a...
Really a high number.
It's a commanding lead.
And if they win at Wireless Tower, they'll be at 50 points.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if we've ever seen something that high.
No,
in season 1. Actually, I can go back right now. Victory point standings for season 1. Aqua. Oh, we have seen that at that high in season 1. The highest number was 63.
I was about to say, go Aqua.
And then it was Dimsun at 54, Magma at 47. And those three were in the commanding lead because everyone after that was under 30.
And Cypher at a commanding 0.
Cypher at definite last. So yeah.
Say what you will. We look pretty in pink.
Is that what color that is?
Yeah.
Colorblind problems.
Next up, we've got Dimsun, who had 33 at the end of phase 8, and they ended up losing 3 points altogether for their loss of Eterna City.
The bonus points. Those make a huge difference.
Exactly.
Because they'd lose complete control over the Eterna territory sector, and then they lose one for Shallor, which means a -3 for them overall, dropping them down to 30.
Yeah, which is, I mean, it's still ahead, but
they're still comfortably in second, but there's a big gap, as we talked about last week, the big gap between Dimsun and both first and third place, actually, which is why I say they are in a very comfortable second place.
Next, we've got Magma, who had a standing 20, ended up going 1-for-1 this phase.
So they have no bonus victory points, so it's the same as their locations. Each location is 1 victory point, so they're still at 20.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But here's where things get interesting. Because if you notice, we've been saying that, like, Snagum was in 4th and Solar Trinity was in 5th last week.
Yeah.
Well, Snagum, only one thing happened with Snagum. They lost 1 point to Striden, which there's nothing wrong with that. That's not a bad turn, actually, dropping them down from 17 points to 16. So they really didn't change much. But Solar Trinity, like we're saying, they had a good week.
Yeah.
They were at 16 last week. And they gain one for Slateport and one for Verdant Turf, which at phase 9 brings them to 18.
Yep. And in doing so, they have passed up Snagin for the last place point, and they are currently in 4th.
Underdog is rising.
But again, this is something we've been talking about throughout these phase reviews, is that last through 3rd place is a very tight section.
Yeah.
If Magma were to lose one territory to Solar Trinity, that would tie them.
No, Solar Trinity would surpass them because they'd go up to 19.
Yeah, but that would mean Magma would lose one.
Oh, wait, they'd be at 9. Sorry.
19.
Lyle and numbers, not a good combination.
I mean, right now we look at... Oh. Sorry, I was looking at... I'm flipping between stuff right now just to see where I'm at.
This is why it's nice having 2 screens.
I wish I had 2 screens. Right now, victory point standings. Solar Trinity has 4. They've been climbing up in numbers throughout this time.
Yeah.
So we can see how this is going to play out.
They've been climbing up. Snagum's been holding mostly steady. Magma's been holding steady. And Dim Sum and Arcadia have been kind of trading back and forth.
Yeah.
So, the big thing that I'd like to point out, and this is me being a negative Nancy.
Fun.
Yeah. We don't see a lot of change in points. A big change in victory points is like 3 or 2 a phase. And then we look and we see commanding leads from Arcadia, which if they win Wireless Tower, they'd be at 50 to Dim Sum's 30. That's a 20-point lead.
Yeah.
And like you say, they'd have to be losing a lot to lose that lead. And it's kind of frustrating to look at. I mean, obviously, if you're in Arcadia, it's great.
Yeah, but...
Arcadia is 1 of 5 teams. So, it's just... What do you think about that? You're an Arcadian, so this is kind of putting you on the spot...
Yeah, the thing is, I'm an Arcadian who's not very active in battles.
Exactly.
This would be like a better suited question for one of the leaders or anything. Yeah. What was the question again?
How do you feel about the Arcadian's strong lead?
I mean, I'm going to be a little negative here, but I mean, it kind of, I don't know, from my point of view, because I love tension. I love tension in... any form of, like, media, whether it be, like, in a movie or TV show or even a game, there's a really big lack in tension with the battles. Arcadia can lose a couple battles here and there, and it's not going to make a big deal. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, it kind of, in my opinion, kind of sucks, because it kind of loses the whole feel of you're really at war. It makes you kind of feel like... you're allowed to screw up. Well, I mean, of course you're allowed to screw up anyway, but now you see, like, last through, like, 3rd place, and one single battle there can make the difference between, like, someone being ahead of 2 or 3 teams at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I really like that. It adds a whole new depth to, the game itself. Especially if you're moving around come the end of the game, and it was really close. It was obviously a great game.
Yeah, and you can... I remember this from Season 1 back when I was in Rocket. We were always in the bottom, and the thing is, it was always jumping around. We were always like, who can we attack to get the most points and climb the highest? Each ability to attack certain teams all of a sudden becomes essential, because if you can drag them down and rise yourself up, you can get higher faster... And all of a sudden, you know, the smallest win can have huge bonuses, and a loss can be devastating. And while it increases the stress, it also increases the fun because, like you say, there's that tension there.
Yeah.
And it, the best thing is, it's great to see, like, if you were in seventh place, but you ended in fourth or fifth, you could look and be like, we climbed up. We didn't, we were at the bottom and we didn't say no, you know? And like Solo Trinity can say that they were at last place for a long time and now they're slowly climbing up. They're 2 points behind third place. That's nothing to sneeze at, you know? So it's, I think the lower three spots are where there's a lot more tension and a lot more paying attention to the victory points. Well, I'm pretty sure you could ask most Arcadians what your victory team's victory point total is, and they'll just be like, a lot.
Yeah.
Because I know when I was on the team, I didn't pay attention. No, I didn't care. Yeah, you don't really. The only reason you pay attention is for the boom burst.
Exactly. It's, and even that, I rarely do.
You know.
Sorry, guys. I'm not great at doing my job.
There's a reason why you keep me around.
Yeah, it's because I have the credibility of Fox News. Oh!
Oh, shots fired. That's great. I'm keeping that in. But here's one thing that can really change stuff. And it's that, because if we look, and like we were talking about Solar Trinity or Arcadia, how the lowest team has had a winning streak against the highest ranked team. Showing that there is no really best team, by the way. The people who keep saying so-and-so best team. Everyone's battle skill is really close.
Yeah.
It's just, I think a large portion of the Turf Wars point distribution is decided by the first few phases. And how lucky you get, how if you can make the right moves, the overworld strategy.
Yeah,
I think if you
get good placement in the first few phases, I mean, take for example, no one even went into Oblivia until at least phase four, was it?
I think it was four? I don't have it on my notes here. But it was a while, and it was like three or four or something like that, and it was Arcadia who did so, because... That was back when I was an admin for Arcadia, and I was the guy who was everyone was looking to for the overworld strategy for the most part. And I'm just,
little do you guys know, Dozer here is a world champion Risk and Checkers player who goes by the name of Bakarov Smirnov the fourth, son of the great Vladimir Smirnov.
And online,
three-time world champion strip Scrabble player.
Well, thank you for unveiling my secret life that was so secret, not even I knew about it.
You're welcome, Bruce Wayne.
Oh, but no, and I think with Arcadia is, and this is me maybe tooting my own horn a little bit, so Sire Coats, you can punch me in the face if you want. Mm-hmm. They played a really good early game, and they got really lucky, is the thing. Arcadia got really lucky because no one attacked them much.
Yeah.
Except for Solar Trinity, but...
No, yeah.
That was, like, never ending.
But we don't take shots at them, because Solar Trinity is awesome. They're maybe the most entertaining people to play against. And even when you lose to them, they're good sports. When they lose, they're good sports. Everybody just has fun going against Solar Trinity.
I'd say that for most teams, though.
Yeah. Take this to heart. Battle Solar Trinity today. Please don't. They got...
They have
a lot going on.
But they're very aggressive, as usual, if we want to go and take a sneak peek at what's going on in Phase 10.
Alright, so this brings us into the last point of these episodes, is the Phase 10 look-in, when we kind of take a sneak peek at what people are doing, because right now there's about 9 comments on this, and a few of them are irrelevant. Let's look. We got Magma attacking Floor Roma Town to make up, so they're already doing the rebattle clause.
Yep.
So that's good.
Yeah.
And a challenge to Arcadia, probably it's a typo.
It's a typo on either the location or the team.
Yeah.
Because Magma's crossing a highway to enter Oblivia. They're going for Tilt Village.
Yeah. Which would end up knocking Snag'em out of Oblivia.
Which is really interesting. Yeah.
And also, the other team who's posted is Solar Trinity, so let's see what they're attacking Arcadia.
All three are against Arcadia.
Well, this is where I go. Have a good evening, everybody. I'm
No. We're not logging off just yet. Roofies. We're not shutting this show down just yet. No, there's some interesting things that can happen because Solar Trinity has been on a winning streak against Arcadia. And as we saw in last phase, a really strong winning streak.
Yeah.
So let's go take a look at these territories they own in Duford, in Hoenn. There's currently a discrepancy over one territory because they're going for Duford, and I think they forgot that the sunken ship lies along that route, a.k.a. Sea Mauve Isle.
A.k.a. Lucius House. A.k.a. Ho-Oh's Perch.
Yep.
A.k.a. Birth Island.
But either way, the only difference between these two areas is Duford lies on a highway. But yeah. The thing is, that would take away bonus points from Arcadia. That would take, so if Arcadia lost that, they'd lose 2 points. And if they're at 47, that would drop them down to 45 right there.
Yeah. One thing they could do, which would be very beneficial if they end up doing this in the long run, when they decide what they're going to do, is rather than chaining from was it Petalburg to Duford, if they went from Sunken Ship to Duford and pulled it off, not only would they get 2 points, but they'd also get an extra bonus point with that.
That'd be great for them.
Which would be great for them. That would skyrocket them well, maybe ahead of Magma, depending on how it goes down.
It's hard to speculate. But either way, they have the potential to start dragging Arcadia slowly down to close that gap.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm thinking, you know, it's like I was saying earlier that that's a big gap. But the thing is, if lots of teams are attacking Arcadia and taking locations from Arcadia, it's the curse of being in first place. Everyone wants to fight you.
Yep.
You can get dragged down pretty easily.
Welcome to the life of Icarus.
And then let's not forget there's Petalburg, which that would only take 1 point from Arcadia because Arcadia doesn't have a lot of Hoenn presence anymore.
The thing is, though, if they get Petalburg, the only thing that it wouldn't really hurt Arcadia as much as taking the sunken ship in the long run. Taking the sunken ship would do an amazing amount of damage to their battle point standings. That brings them down from a 50 to a 46. No, a 47. Which is a lot.
Oh no, they only get one bonus point for that, so it only drop them
exactly,
down.
But they lose two points.
Yeah, they lose 2 points.
Which comes out to three, so.
Wait. Oh, like. Are you saying if they did the chain idea that you suggested?
If they chain from Sunken Ship, Slateport would gain 3 points into Duford. They would gain 3 points by getting both those points plus the territory bonus for Northwestern Hoenn. And then on top of that, Arcadia would be losing 3 points in conjunction.
Mm-hmm.
Which could slowly start to drain Arcadia.
Like I was saying, if all the teams... Because it's not just that, they're just attacking Arcadia wherever they can, because they're also hitting them up at Silage City in Kalos.
I think they just like fighting us.
I think so. The thing is, Silage is also another highway location.
Ooh.
And I think that is a highway location into Unova. Is it? I think
yes, it is.
Silage goes. This,
I hate the Kalos region because too many sea named cities, too many cities that aren't memorable, too many things I don't care about, like Cormorine, and then
there's
like
Cormorine, there's Coral Way,
there's
Silage, there's Camphire, there's Kilude, which it's a K, but it still has the K sound.
Yeah, there's too much sea.
And it's in Kalos.
Yeah. Wait a minute. If you mark points between all the cities that have seas in them, it forms a triangle.
Oh god, not this again.
Kalos is the sixth region. There are two games. Two games divided by the sixth region. No, sixth region divided by two games equals three. What else has a three? The number of points on a triangle. Oh my goodness. Mike Meyer is Illuminati confirmed.
What? You see, ladies and gentlemen, what I have to put up with? You think he just does this on the show? You're wrong.
I'm the living embodiment of 4chan.
Why do I talk to you?
Because,
okay.
Ethics. Mm-hmm. Oh, also.
Oh, we just got the correction on Solar Trinity's actions. They're, instead of attacking for Duford, they're going for Rustboro.
Him? Okay.
Yeah. Which okay. is, it's like, okay, problem solved.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah.
So you don't take also... my advice.
They haven't heard this podcast yet. Good. I don't think they want to chain, because like I've always said, I don't like chaining either. It's risky business.
Oh, but it's so good for the game.
Risk versus reward, as they say.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And in the game of Risk, you have to take risks, because if you don't risk at all, then you won't bisque at all.
That was my skull planting into my desk so hard that it flipped my mouse upside down.
I kind of wish you'd just end the episode there on the thud.
That'd be great.
I think that'd be more entertaining than Queenie's this comment. All right. So any more predictions on what may happen this phase?
Well, I really... I don't know. Like, I think a lot of things are going to depend on, honestly, what Snagum tries to do.
Yeah.
Because if Magma is going after Tilt Village where Snagum is, Snagum's not going to want to lose that Unova Oblivia territory.
Yeah, they're probably going to try and go after another point in Unova, whether it be something like maybe... Mount Lyuda, the Tikul Monument, because those are two areas they could easily hit.
You know, they could hit anything, and if they
could
take...
In fact, they could maybe even go for the Old Mansion and Valdera Volcano to try and seal up an entire section for some bonus points.
Yeah, you know, try and secure themselves, or if they want to, you know, mess with Arcadia's bonus points, because a lot of their bonus points are coming from the fact that they have a lot of control in Oblivia and Unova. And I also think that what Solar Trinity is trying to do here is by going for Silage, by eventually aiming for Duford, because the reason that they thought they went for Duford is they thought they had Rustboro.
Yeah.
Because from Rustboro, they can go to Duford.
And from Duford, they can cross over into Oblivia.
Exactly.
But they do... Yeah, they're...
And from Silage... They can push into... Wait, is Duford the one that links to Oblivia? Or is...
No, Silage links into...
Unova.
Unova.
Slateport links into Unova, I think, as well.
Yes, it does. It links into... Aspertia.
Aspertia City. Which means Solar Trinity is the closest thing Arcadia has to a rival team in the sense that the team that they fight a lot.
You know, as for what Dimsung might do this turn, I think they're just going to keep trying to push to break up Arcadia's bonus point distribution in Oblivia.
To try and close that first, second place boundary. But I'm still, I don't know if I just like Solar Trinity too much, but I'm just looking at what they're doing here. No, by having Silage and Slateport, they have two highways that they can hit
into Unova and then sandwich Unova.
Yeah.
That's pretty
because they used to have a corner of Unova and Arcadia kicked them out.
Also, another thing to bring up that I just realized clicking around the turf tracker, Snaga might want to go towards Nacrine City as well.
What?
Yeah, they're 1 point away from a bonus point off of that. Or no, this hasn't been updated, has it?
No, it hasn't.
No, okay. My bad.
Because, yeah, no, they lost Striden City.
We even talked about that. What am I doing?
Sarko set it up.
And
also, I'm looking at this too, and I think this is one of those phases where defensive actions can have a large role to play.
Yeah.
Because we're seeing, I think we're going to see more highway battles this phase. I'm just starting to get the feeling that we're going to start seeing a lot of highway battles.
Possibly another thing that could happen, well, never mind, Magma or put their things. Oh. But, I know there's a lot of these, like, these two area spots that have, two different teams controlling them, and we can see some, back and forths going on, possibly even in, phase 11 with these. Mm-hmm. So, we'll see how it plays out.
But no, because we're starting to reach the point where each team has an entire
region, basically.
Pretty much.
Basically, Dimsung has all of Sinnoh. Arcadia has more or less all of Unova except for a small section, all of Oblivia, and then you start to see Solar Trinity taking a huge stand out in
Hoenn
for the most part.
And West Johto.
Oh, yeah. I haven't really been paying much attention in the Johto Kanto area.
Kanto Johto is the only place where it's not a clear team. It's an even split between Magma and Snaggum.
Yeah, and even Kalos is kind of mixed right now. You see some good Dimsung registration in there, but you do see a mix of Magma in there with Arcadia and other teams.
Yeah, and Snaggum has their own little... They have all of South Central Kalos, I think.
They have all of, South Central Kalos, and a nice little footing in, Southeast Unova.
But... Yep. So everyone's their sections and territories, and we're starting to see the more, I like to call it the cross-region pushing.
Yeah. I mean, really, Snaggum could even go for more stuff in Kanto, because they're one section behind in Northeast Kanto if they go for Cerulean. They're one section behind if they go for Viridian City in North Kanto.
You know, I've been thinking this since day one. I'm looking at Snaggum's distribution. They're all over the place.
Yeah.
Like, they're the only team... Them and Magma are the only teams, probably because they're fighting a lot, that don't have a complete region under lock. And they're kind of just spreading out. Magma is making a huge comeback, though, because you see them in a corner of Kalos. They've got a chunk of Sinnoh. They've got half of Kanto Johto. And the thing with Snaggum is it kind of feels like too many pots in one kettle.
Yeah.
You know, not trying to criticize the team. I'm just looking at what I see and how it's playing out. Because... I think we're seeing two overworld strategies in play here. One is control as much territory as you can in, like, small pocketed locations versus trying to control a large region.
Yeah, and both have their benefits, but, I mean, I feel like if a team was to get knocked out at this point, we're going to say we're going to go 20 phases ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And something finally does happen where one team gets knocked out of the competition. I don't know if we'd end the season before that or what. But in all honesty, I could possibly see Snaggum getting knocked out of the race.
Really?
As the first one. Because the scatter strategy does work in some aspects, but it leaves them very weak to other attacks. I mean, look at where they're at right now. Their Kanto section, they're pretty strong there, but they have constant attacks that they can have against Magma, and Magma is going to want those territories eventually. I'm honestly surprised they didn't go against Arcadia for Ecruteak, but then again, that highway entrance is really nice there. And they had to, of course, do their Flora Aroma battle. But I can see them going for Ecruteak sometime in the leading
Well, they went for phases. Ecruteak last phase and lost, so they couldn't do That's that again.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that would section off a good portion there.
But Nubark, even, going for Nubark.
Who's controlling Nubark? Because I have an error.
I think it's Snaggum.
Okay. Yeah.
But the thing is, I'm looking at
the mysterious team Missing No controlling that. But
then I have I'm looking at the battles tracker, though, and the thing is, the Snaggum and Arcadia colors look exactly the same to me, so there's like really a help. Slight hue difference. And once again, you can be following along as we're talking with the battle tracker, because we'll have that linked in the episode description on the website.
Yeah, but I mean, just the fact that they have the least amount of territories right now, and there's going to be more battles being pounded out phase after phase after phase. And I hate to say it, but it could happen. And as much as it would suck, I could maybe see them losing first. Also, a next one that I would say could end up losing next could possibly be Magma instead of Solar Trinity. Because Solar Trinity, though they do have their little spacious areas where they're scattered a good bit, they do have their clusters where they have a good presence.
South Central Hoenn, Southwest Hoenn, Southeast exactly. Hoenn, West Johto, which connects to Hoenn.
Magma, on the other hand, has very vulnerable areas. For example, with their newly captured Heart Home, they're going to be a target phase 11 for Dimsung, so they can get a little more of their leverage back. Going into Northeast Kalos, they've got Snowbell and the Pokemon League. Right now I see them as a competitor with Dimsung at the moment. It really comes down to Dimsung's going to be wanting to go after Magma. Magma's going to be wanting to go after Snaggum. But Snaggum doesn't really seem to be going after anyone in particular.
And well, if we look at their history of moves.
Yeah.
They are the team that uses defensive actions the most.
Yeah.
And their attacks, they've attacked Magma. Magma has been their main battle target for the first few phases, but then that turned towards Arcadia a little bit. And then the thing is, they went for Tilt Village, they won Tilt Village, and they never capitalized on that. Instead, they spent 2 points going for a defensive action, and in one of those territories lost in Pallet Town. Yeah. Right after, because it was, yeah, that was turn 8 where they used a defensive action and lost in Pallet after winning in Tilt Village and Slateport. And I'm just,
yeah, it's just, it feels like in a game like this, when you have the 5 teams, it feels like to have it working in perfect synergy, they should all be rotating with the same, like, kind of predicted attacks. Because you can see Magma's going to want to go after Snaggum for their key points, and Dimsung's going to be wanting to go after Magma for their key points. Arcadia has been trying to hit Magma for some certain points, and then you have Solar Trinity attacking Arcadia for their points, but you don't see Snaggum going for Solar Trinity in particular. And where you're losing 1 and 2 points each turn, but also gaining 1 and 2 points from hitting those people. And you kind of have kind of like a wheel turning, where there's a steady flow of new points being both taken away and put in. You don't see that going on with Snaggum right now.
Yeah, you know, this makes me think, I want to ask you this. What do you think are the implications and the advantages? Like, what do you think of the entire defense action mechanic? And its usage?
I don't know. I think, in all honesty, it's kind of useless. Because you do get one free grunt win. But with the way that battles are structured now, one grunt win really isn't much.
All it does is guarantee an admin battle.
Yeah.
But we've seen those defensive actions come through pretty good. But most of the times, do they matter?
Yeah, it's... I don't know. I mean, they're good for the game. I'll say that. That's mm-hmm. one thing with this metagame, is there's a lot of rules put in place that makes it good for the game, that makes you want to play the game. A lot of competitive games have certain things that are bad for the game. I mean, take card games, for example. Take a game like the Pokemon TCG, for example. There are cards that are bad for the game, like Hypnotoxic Laser, which is just dumb. And then, a card that puts a Pokemon asleep and poisons it on the same thing is stupid.
Insane, yeah.
Yeah. And then there's like games like Yu-Gi-Oh! Where you have entire game mechanics that are just not good for the game. Such as like the Cliff Wards. Yeah, you can get around them, but they don't make the game any fun. Turf Wars, on the other hand, doesn't really have too many mechanics in it that make it bad for the game.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I don't think I can really name a mechanic that's bad for the game.
Everything exists to push the game forward, to give people options, including the defensive actions mechanic. I think it's great for teams that are getting overwhelmed with battles.
Yeah.
I think it's great for when in a key, like, if you're trying to stop a chain, or I think it's best used if your highway location is being attacked, if someone's crossing a highway to attack you.
Yeah, that would definitely be probably the best one, because like we said, to force a leader battle anyway. So.
Exactly. By using that defensive action, you can basically forego all the grunt battles and do the leader battle.
I mean, if anything, it would probably be a better option to try and attack something you might lose than have a defensive action on something that might end up being insignificant at the end.
Because the thing is, your opponent are paying 2 tokens to attack your location. You're paying 2 tokens to win 1 battle for that location.
Yeah.
So when you do a defensive action on just random territory because you're being attacked, you're giving up the same amount of tokens for your opponent, but your opponent has the potential to gain a lot more than you do. Because you win 1 grunt battle, which, as we said, forces an admin battle. But the thing is, an admin battle and two grunts can still win that territory, even if you have that one defensive action. It's not like a highway battle where there are no admin battles, it's just a leader battle, and you force that leader battle.
Yeah.
For example, if Magma continues their attack onto Tilt Village, where Snagum controls, I would not be surprised, especially since Snagum uses the defensive action a lot, but I think that'd be a very good point for them to post a defensive action, because they'd force that leader battle, and we all know that A. Kelly is an amazing OU battler.
Oh yeah, definitely.
The battles between A. Kelly and anyone are always fun to watch. Same with Maxie. Honestly, that's the thing I'm most excited about if they continue with the Tilt Village Highway, is because we get to see a Maxie.
We get to see a Maxie battle.
Against an A. Kelly battle, and that's going to be awesome.
We get to see that. We get to see that great Pokemon. I mean, Venusaur!
Venusaur, man!
I love the Eager After Out friends, and I can't push that even further.
No, it's just... There are leaders where it's fun to watch them battle because they're really good.
Yeah.
And it's like they can see into the future.
In fact, like any of the leader battles right now, the leader battles in general are great to watch.
Mm-hmm.
They're always intense. They're always entertaining.
Yeah. Like we talked about that one between Blake and Maxie for a little bit.
Dear God, that was
beautiful.
The mind
that was.
Games.
I'm actually going to link that replay in this post and in the episode description so people can go and see what these leader battles entail. Because they're OU battles, but they're different because there's type restrictions.
Yeah.
So you see a lot...
And you'll see during the battle, like, the critical hits, they don't matter.
It's just, it's insane, and I love it. Because, like, you'll see things that you wouldn't generally see in OU, like maybe a Toxicroak or a Meloetta.
Yeah.
Of all things. Who's an RU Pokemon in an OU team, essentially, and it does work. It does a lot of work. And they're just, there's so many pivoting, there's so many predictions, because they're all well-seasoned battlers. They've battled each other enough that they have a sense of each other's playstyle. And it's just, it's beautiful. It's really the best thing. If you're going to watch a Turf Wars battle, watch a good leader battle.
Yeah.
You will not be disappointed.
All right, so I think that wraps up our review. We went a good bit longer than I think we wanted to, but oh well, I'm not editing.
Shut up.
So come back next week when we talk about Phase 10 and what will happen. And I might have a question for you, Dozer, about a game mechanic.
Oh boy.
But you'll have to wait till next week to find out what that is. I've been Syarkos.
I've been Dozer.
And this has been the Boom Burst Review. Bye.
Bye. We hope you get well soon, Queenie.
Yes, Queenie, don't die.